From NPR, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The death of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin in Florida is raising new questions for Latinos about race and identity.
There is a difficulty in this conversation that some folks are having. How do we think about the fact that Zimmerman is Latino? What does that mean?
For the next installment in our series on Latinos and health, we visit a clinic in the nation's capital that's making a difference for Latinos with HIV and AIDS.
I got the HIV ribbon because it's a conversation starter, because especially with young people, because they're nosy and they want to know what your tattoos are about.
And we talked to comedian Will Ferrell in Espanol y en Inglés.
No one really speaks that way, and we were like, we know, that's the point.
That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, but first, this news update. The body of Mexican transgender activist Agnes Torres Hernandez was found in a ditch outside the Mexican city of Puebla earlier this month. Hernandez was the sixth fatal victim of hate crimes against the gay community in Puebla this year. And while concerns remain high, there are also signs of progress. More openly gay and transgender Latin Americans are achieving positions in government. So in the middle of gains and setbacks, how much progress has actually been made? Andres Duque is a gay rights activist, journalist, and blogger. He joins us to talk about the current state of gay rights in Latin America. Andres, welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you for the invitation.
So looking back at to where things were a decade ago, essentially in terms of gay activism in Latin America, how much has actually changed for the gay community in Latin America?
I think there's been a tremendous advance in terms of LGBT rights throughout the region. I actually was born in Colombia, South America, and I came to the United States because I wanted to live an openly gay life. And I never would have dreamt when I was a young kid that I could have lived an openly gay life in my home country. So to see all these advances happen so rapidly, it's just amazing and inspiring to some degree, even though some of these homophobic attacks still happen.
So what would be the advances? I mean, there's marriage equality in Mexico City. Can you name some of the other advances across Latin America in terms of gay rights?
Sure. Argentina and Mexico City are the countries and cities that have approved marriage equality in Latin America. Marriage equality is also being discussed in Colombia, Brazil, and other countries throughout the region. But marriage is not the only advance that has happened. Partnership rights, inheritance rights, adoption rights, and also protections from work discrimination.
All right, but at the same time that you have these developments in rapid fire pace throughout Latin America, you know, you have the hate crime, like the murder of the Mexican activist, the transgender activist, Agnes Torres Hernandez in Puebla. You have police brutality incidents against LGBT activists in Peru last year. You have a string of murders against gays and transgender folks in Puerto Rico. You have a sharp increase of gay people murdered in Brazil. So is there a step backward in terms of hate crimes, though?
You know, I don't know if it's a backlash. I think, you know, for the last decade, I've seen these tremendous advances happen. And sure, there have been some homophobic attacks during that decade. But for some reason, during this past couple of weeks and months, there's been this increase in reports of hate crimes, particularly against transgender individuals throughout the region. You know, Daniel Zamudio in Chile also got attacked 2 weeks ago by a group of neo-Nazis. Interestingly, it has elicited, you know, a lot of reaction from individuals in each country, and using social media like Twitter and Facebook, they've been organizing. So in the case of Agnes Torres, for example, within a week, five people were arrested and charged with murder, and now the investigation goes on in terms of whether it was a hate crime or it was something else. But, you know, you see individuals in each country take action and demand justice. And to some degree, the tragedy of Agnes Torres' death also shows that, you know, there is strength out there in terms of individuals' action and making these countries accountable to the violence that happens to our communities.
Andres, are you optimistic in terms of where gay rights are going in Latin America, or does this advent of hate crimes really have you concerned in terms of real progress?
I am optimistic. I think, you know, there's no going back. I think some of the reaction to these hate crimes shows that the LGBT community in Latin America is growing in strength. There's still backlash from, you know, right-wing religious groups. These crimes actually motivate us to react and to say, you cannot do this to us. And moving forward, you know, the fact that there's leadership out there, I think speaks to the future and speaks to the fact that towards the future, I do think that it is going to be a more hopeful place.
Andres, thanks for speaking to us on Latino USA.
Thank you so much.
Andres Duque is a gay rights activist, a journalist, and an award-winning blogger. His blog is Blabiendo. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word, and we are back in 30 seconds. That's 30 segundos. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We continue our year-long focus on Latinos and health with another health hero profile. Today we're showcasing a community clinic in Washington, D.C.'s predominantly Latino neighborhood of Columbia Heights. It's called La Clínica del Pueblo. This community health center has offered medical care since 1983. But as our producer Lily Percy reports, in recent years, it's expanded its services to the growing number of young, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender members of the Latino community. How? They've opened a new youth center called Empoderate, which means empower yourself.
There are over 30 lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth centers across the country, but few specifically target the Spanish-speaking LGBTQ community. Empoderate is the only youth center of its kind in the greater Washington area.
We serve two populations. We serve young transgender Latinas under 29, and we serve also young gay, bisexual Latino men.
That's Manuel Diaz Ramirez. He's the youth program manager for La Clínica del Pueblo, and he also runs Empoderate. Today he's taking us on a tour of the youth center, which looks like the rec room of a college dorm. The walls are decorated with handmade posters, banners, and outfits made entirely out of condoms.
Our participants are very engaged in shows and performing. So every pride season, they like to create condom outfits. We have skirts here, bras. That costume over there is made with female condoms.
Washington, D.C. has the highest HIV infection rate in the country. And the Centers for Disease Control estimates that one out of 36 Latino men will be infected with HIV at some point in their life. That statistic is one that Jose Ramirez, the Youth Center's coordinator, knows firsthand. He's HIV positive, and he shows me some of the tattoos on his neck.
5 years. I got the HIV ribbon because it's a conversation starter, because especially with young people, because they're nosy and they want to know what your tattoos are about. So I let them know, it's the AIDS ribbon. They're like, but why do you have that? And I'm like, oh, because I'm HIV positive. And then they're like, oh, you are, but you don't look sick. Are you okay? And stuff like that. So, yeah, that's why I got it.
Jose was 15 when he came out to his family, and 17 when he became HIV positive. He's 30 now, and for many of the young people that come to the center, he's a source of comfort, an example of a gay Latino man living with HIV.
It's very important, especially because when they come in here, they actually see Latinos, they hear their language.
This is actually the room where the HIV testing goes on.
With the help of 5 bilingual counselors, Empoderate offers free HIV testing for their clients, as well as counseling to help guide the young men and women who are tested. They also run various weekly discussion groups, including some for families. Manuel Diaz Ramirez, Empoderate's director, believes those meetings are an essential part of providing support for their younger clients.
We try to talk about the ideas of what's being a man or a woman, and then we explore what are their myths about being gay or being transgender. It's not easy for Latino families to understand what is being a gay guy or a transgender woman, but we try to support them.
Manuel was born and raised in Lima, Peru, He's lived in the U.S. for over 6 years, but he still remembers how hard it was to come to terms with his own sexuality.
I was raised in a very conservative family, very loving, but it was very conservative. So I wasn't aware of who I was, totally who I was, until years later.
Manuel came out to his family in 2006, when he was 34. Even though he was older than most of the kids he sees at the youth center when he came out, he understands the rejection they face within traditional Latino families. In first-generation immigrant families, the parents usually depend on the children for help. They need them to translate everything from bills to important documents, and once their kids are older and assimilated, they also depend on them financially.
Their families sometimes only look for them when they need money. So they call them only when they are looking for money. And that hurts. They try to believe that that's going to change at some point. But if the family is not working from the heart to respect them and accept them for who they are, that's not going to change.
Throughout our conversation, the sound of a male voice singing a Spanish ballad competes in the background. Who's singing?
Carlos. That's a very interesting thing. It's not like we promote these kind of things, but they feel so...
They're so at home that they feel comfortable singing.
And sometimes it's all day long. If they have a show to do in a nightclub, Carlos rehearses here. This is the only space. They don't have a home. Even the place where they sleep every night is not a home for them.
We heard you singing through the walls.
What were you singing?
What I was singing, si me pudieras ver. If you can see me. It's by a Peruvian guy that I love. He is a real example to my life, Luciano Pereira.
Carlos was 15 when he moved from El Salvador to D.C. with his family. When he came out to them a year later, they kicked him out of the house.
They throw me to the street and they tell me, you know, Carlos, do whatever you have to do, but you have to keep away.
Around that time, he saw a flyer for Empoderate at a metro station, and he's been volunteering, singing, and hanging out at the center ever since. Carlos says that Manuel Diaz Ramirez and the other counselors at the center have been like mothers and fathers for him. They've given him strength and support and have taught him to be comfortable with who he is.
If you don't love yourself, you know, you can love somebody else.
As Manuel continues our tour of the center, more people start to arrive, many of them carrying trays of food and party decorations.
Since they don't have family supporting them, having a youth center like this is very important for their well-being. It means a lot for them. So we're going to have fun tonight with them.
Yeah, you say family. Walking around this, I see pictures, you know, of yourself sometimes with young kids, from Youth Pride. It feels like a home. It feels like, you know, the way you would decorate your home with family pictures. Do you feel that way about it?
Yep. Yeah, totally. At least what a home should be, right?
Soon, everyone begins to gather in a nearby room, waiting for the party to start. Among those waiting is a young transgender woman named Anaomi Vasquez. She's from El Salvador, and she belongs to a discussion group held at Empoderate for young transgender women. I found a little corner for myself, Anaomi explains. I don't have any family here, so I survive thanks to my friends. I feel that they are my family. That's what the youth center means to me. It's family. For Latino USA from Washington, D.C., I'm Lily Percy.
For more information about La Clínica del Pueblo and Empoderate, visit our website at latinousa.org. By now, his face is familiar to millions of Americans. The smiling teenage boy, his face framed by a hoodie. An African-American man-child. But what about the man who shot Trayvon Martin, 28-year-old George Zimmerman, son of a white father and a Latina mother? As of now, he's not been charged. The shooting is being investigated by a local grand jury. Federal authorities are also looking into it. The story of these two Americans, the 17-year-old whose life was cut short, and the man who says he shot in self-defense, have prompted questions about youth, safety, racial, and ethnic identity. Joining us now to talk about this is Kai Wright. He's editorial director of ColorLines.com and a frequent guest on Latino USA. Glad to have you back, Kai.
Glad to be here.
All right. So almost every day there are new details about both Trayvon and George Zimmerman that are emerging. There's a lot that we don't know yet. But for now, What's your sense of how this story is playing out among African Americans and Latinos? What are you hearing kind of from both sides?
For most folks, you just hear outrage. I think there is a difficulty in this conversation that some folks are having. How do we think about the fact that Zimmerman is Latino? I think the point, of course, is that the ethnicity of the shooter is entirely irrelevant to the case. The point is – I mean, he could have been black and it wouldn't change the dynamics here. The point is that we all live in a society where young black men are – considered pariahs, where we've all been taught to believe over the course of hundreds of years that young black men are a threat. And that is a deeply ingrained part of our culture, and it's a deeply ingrained part of our criminal justice system. And as a consequence, too many of us react in often fatal ways, whether we're cops or neighborhood watch people.
Given that you have Arizona, you have Alabama, laws on the books specifically targeting immigrants, what about young Latino men?
As I said, we've had hundreds of years of narrative saying that you should fear black men. They're dangerous and they need to be controlled. And it's very clear that we are working on a narrative right now that says you should fear Latino men. I mean, the 2010 election cycle, it was really striking and bracing to anyone who watched that closely at the state level and some of the campaign ads that came out. I'm thinking specifically of Sharon Angle's campaign in Nevada. This evocation of these threatening, scary-looking Latino men who should be feared. And as a consequence, you're seeing a sadly lengthening roll of Latino men who have been victim of either police violence or vigilante justice as well.
So we're hearing a lot about the talk that African-American parents have with their sons at a certain point to basically prepare them for being black men in the streets of wherever they may be. So what about the talk that Latino parents have or are not having with their kids?
The question we all have to be asking, the talk we all need to be giving ourselves is what are we going to do to change this culture and to change the laws in this country such that we don't have to give our kids talks on what happens when somebody approaches you at school or in the street or on your job and assumes that you're a threat. Sometimes they have a gun, but sometimes it's much less lethal than that, and it's still just as damaging. And so you can't go through life trying to disarm people's racism, and we need to be working on how do we create a society where that's not the case.
There's clearly a rising anger about the fact that this whole situation has happened, that there hasn't been an arrest. Do you think that this has been productive anger in terms of, let's just say, having the conversation around Latinos and African Americans?
I hope that it will be very productive anger. It was really moving what I've seen. I haven't been down there, but what I've seen reported in Alabama and the coming together of some of the black clergy and the black leadership with Latino leadership and in the communities. And I think we're going to see the same thing around Trayvon Martin's death. And I think that's going to be an increasingly important thing in this nation as we move forward because both of these communities are consistently demonized, and the more we can come together, the harder that's going to be to do.
Thanks so much for joining us, Kai.
Thanks so much for having me and having this conversation.
Kai Wright is the editorial director of Colorlines.com and a fellow of the Nation Institute. In a minute, comedian Will Ferrell crosses the border into uncharted territory in his new movie, Casa de mi Padre. Will Ferrell on Latino USA. That's coming up. No se vayan. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
He is amigo to all living things. He is loyal to his family. And he will not stand for injustice. His name is...
Yo me llamo Armando Alvarez.
Armando.
You speak American?
No, señor. No habla americano.
A new movie has proved to be a hit among Latino audiences. Casa de mi Padre has a mostly Latino cast and was made entirely in Spanish with English subtitles. Its main star is actor and comedian Will Ferrell.
Quiero a la muchacha. Solo te daré una oportunidad. Suelta a la mujer.
The movie is a spoof on telenovelas and Hollywood westerns. Will Ferrell joins us now from Los Angeles. Buenos días, Will. ¿Qué onda? ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien. ¿Y tú?
Yo estoy muy bien, Will. Actually, when I was watching it with my daughter when I came out, I said, you know what? Will Ferrell has just made Pocho Spanish totally cool. And your Spanish es fabuloso, la verdad. Es increíble tu español. But you actually make some mistakes in Spanish in the film, and you did that, from my understanding, on purpose?
Yes. I think there's just many different levels of comedy in this movie. What you're touching on is the fact that my character Armando speaks in a very formal way and a very stilted kind of Spanish that's just not really spoken. And we comment on that in the movie. And in fact, we had many different times on the set where people were trying to correct my Spanish and saying, you know, no one really speaks that way. And we were like, we know, that's the point.
I mean, it really makes you to be an endearing character because you really did get the old school Mexican Spanish style and the Norteño style.
Yeah, we really owe a lot to our translator, a gentleman by the name of Patrick Perez, who first he translated the script from English to Spanish and then helped really with the whole performance.
And the funny thing is that, of course, there was all kinds of skepticism from studios all around. But when you actually started showing the movie, it turned out that the people who found it the funniest actually were the Mexican movie executives.
Yes, yes, without a doubt. The kind of Mexican executive embraced this film and thought it was kind of a loving homage to these types of films. At the same time, it has a real point of view that shows that we understand that U.S.-Mexico relations really are a two-way street.
One out of every four movie tickets that are being sold right now is bought by a Latino. You clearly understand the market. But when you hear that kind of from the Hollywood executives, like, we're not prepared to take the risk just yet, is that defeating to you? What do you do when you're just like, guys, don't you get it?
Well, you know, we did think we had this unique movie that would kind of suffice to this theory that, like you said, the statistics show that Latinos really come out in force to see movies. And we thought, oh, this would totally serve that. And yet at the same time, we were just thankful creatively that we got to make it and that it is now out in theaters. And we're going to have actually a bigger release in Mexico than we are going to have here, which is fantastic. You know, I think these are just kind of those walls that need to be chipped away at. And it's movies like these that slowly but surely break those things down.
Did you want the film to have a kind of political connotation? Could you get away from the fact that there was going to be some level of political connotation in the making of a film that really is saying to Latinos and to Latin America, te veo, yo los veo, I see you, I want to be you?
Yeah. I think it obviously, you know, the inception just started out as a unique comedy premise. To put myself as someone in American comedy in a Spanish language film was something I felt you'd never seen before. And then from there, once we started really working on the story and developing the script, we really saw that it was an opportunity to both have, you know, a really funny, outlandish, outside-the-box movie. And within that... get out this point of view of commentary, which we thought was a great opportunity to kind of do both.
Will, are you talking about tearing down walls between the...
Well, I am right now in this moment, yes.
the big question that I really want to know, Will, is did your love of Latino culture really begin with your relationship with the cowbell?
Is that considered a Latino instrument? I believe so, right?
Well, for today it is.
For today, right.
So, ¿cómo practicaste tus líneas? No, de verdad. I mean, how did you practice? When I was watching you, I was like, so does he have cue cards just in case?
Sure.
Or what did you do in terms of acting and learning these lines fully in Spanish?
Well, we did have cue cards, you know, ready to go every day. First day of filming is this scene in the movie where I deliver a long monologue about what my idea of the perfect woman is. And I didn't use cue cards that day. And it was the most nerve-wracking day of filming I've ever done. But was exhilarating because I could tell the cast and the crew were all kind of looking at me going, is he going to be able to pull this off?
Was there a sense of risk at all for you in doing this in any way?
You know, I think there would have been more if we were doing a more typical kind of parody in the sense of I speak Spanish poorly, or, you know, the fact that we gave Mexico a voice in this movie, and then the fact that we were able to attract such a great cast who understood the joke as well and also embraced this concept, that kind of ensured that that there wasn't as much risk.
Y finalmente, Will, para todos esos jóvenes estudiantes que no quieren estudiar español, ¿qué mensaje tienes para ellos?
¿Cómo?
Los estudiantes.
The students.
You know, the kids who are like, I don't want to do my Spanish homework tonight.
Oh, yeah. Well, do it. Do. I mean, if you have a chance to maintain two languages. I mean, my wife is fluent in Swedish, and I've forced her to speak Swedish to our kids. And that's a gift that they're getting, that they don't realize it, but you know, language acquisitions opens up both sides of your brain and does all these things. And besides that, when you're a young adult, you'll be very thankful that you're fluent in multiple languages.
And so the message is, go see the movie and try not to read the subtitles.
Right. But if you have to read the subtitles, it's okay.
Will Ferrell, it's really been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thanks, Maria. My pleasure.
Will Ferrell stars in the new movie, Casa de mi Padre. He spoke to us from Los Angeles. For this week, that's Latino USA. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Tina Rubio, Andres Caballero, and Michael Jones. We had help this week from Neil Rausch and NPR New York. Latino USA is part of The Futuro Media Group, producing public media for the world to hear and see, based in Harlem. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Our year-long look at Latinos in health is made possible by funding from Pfizer. With Pfizer Helpful Answers, a family of patient assistance programs for patients in need, at PfizerHelpfulAnswers.com.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained, at 1-800-HARDWOOD. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.